Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I am reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section A, State and Local News, for Friday, June 23, 2023. Midland has Texas's fourth lowest gas price average. AAA Texas gas price average in Odessa is lowest in state, by Ben Schaefer. Midland is home to the fourth lowest gas price average in the state, AAA Texas reported Thursday. Midland's average gas price, $3.09, is 12 cents cheaper than the state average of $3.21. During a week when AAA Texas reported increases in 23 of the 27 largest metro areas that it surveys, there was no change in Midland. In Odessa, there was a weekly decrease of 3 cents. The $2.99 average there is 10 cents lower than the average in Midland, 22 cents cheaper than the state average, and the cheapest gas price in the state, according to AAA Texas. The four cities with the cheapest gas price averages in the state are West Texas cities: Odessa, San Angelo at $3.01, Lubbock at $3.05, and Midland. The four cities where AAA Texas reported a decrease or no change this week were El Paso, a 7-cent decrease, Lubbock, a 1-cent decrease, Midland, and Odessa. Other averages across the region included $3.18 in Abilene, an increase of 5 cents, $3.21 in Amarillo, an increase of 1 cent, and $3.32 in El Paso. The average increased 6 cents in San Angelo. The state average increased by 7 cents in Texas, while AAA Texas reported the national gas price average dropped by a penny this week. The state average is still 37 cents cheaper than the national average of $3.58. Gas price averages are steadily increasing in many metro areas around the state this week, AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster said in a news release. Demand for fuel remains very strong as the Independence Day holiday period draws near. This trend is expected to continue, as this is a popular time for family road trips. With more pressure on demand and higher crude oil prices, gas prices may continue to climb. Texas is home to the seventh cheapest gas price average nationwide. Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, and Oklahoma have cheaper fuel prices. A year ago, Midland's average gas price was $4.48, which is $1.39 more expensive than this week. Midland Police Department. New recruits could help fill 40% of vacancies, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman said the number of officers could increase by 15 to 17 if those in training and those headed to the August Academy join the ranks. Herman said the number of vacancies is up to 42 right now, and the force could use some reinforcements. If all those in training and headed to the Academy end up at MPD, the number of vacancies will drop by as much as 40%. Herman said recent raises and stipends have helped recruiting, but the department has benefited the most from new areas of recruitment. He said recruiters have traveled to military bases and out west to cities like El Paso. He said the city has had no luck in the more metropolitan areas to the east, like Dallas and Austin. He said the lack of staffing has forced some changes in daily operations, specifically changing priorities. We focus exclusively on public safety rather than something that is not a police matter, Herman said. That means not responding to accidents unless there are injuries or a vehicle that is immobilized. Other calls where there is no immediate need from a public safety standpoint are likely to be directed to the main line at MPD or to the department's online reporting system. That is the only way to ensure there are officers to respond to the calls that are most important, he said. Congressman Pfluger to hold town hall meeting Monday in Midland, by Ben Schaefer. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, will hold a town hall at noon Monday at the Bush Convention Center. According to Pfluger's office, the San Angelo Republican will discuss the southern border and the House censure of Representative Adam Schiff. Pfluger has held 6 subcommittee hearings on his counterterrorism, law enforcement, and intelligence subcommittee on the Homeland Security Committee, exposing threats of the open border. Pfluger's office added that he will discuss the latest on recent Hunter Biden allegations. The public is invited to attend the event and ask the congressman questions. Town Hall is Monday, June 26th at 12 p.m. at Bush Convention Center. Heat keeps rising. How are outdoor venues coping? Water jugs, large fans, umbrellas are just a few ways outdoor venues are trying to combat the heat for guests. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. For the last week, temperatures in Midland have exceeded 100 degrees, leaving community members sweaty and trapping them indoors. For outdoor venues, this means finding a way to encourage Midlanders to brave the heat while attending concerts, events, and more. A popular spot Thursday through Saturday, The Destination, hosts an array of musical events toward the end of every week. Although showtimes don't start until the evening and many seating areas are equipped with a covering, the excessive heat has forced the Salazar family to get creative with solutions. The first day of summer has hit us hard. The heat is absolutely a concern, and we have placed cooling measures to help. We have many fans at many locations and just purchased more for this weekend. 4 large evaporative coolers located in patio areas and in the stage, awnings, trees, umbrellas, and canopies, owner Martin Salazar said. Over at the Rockhounds ballpark, 51 years of baseball in oppressive West Texas heat makes the crew and staff pros at keeping their guests safe. General Manager Monty Hoppel spoke to the reporter Telegram about what precautions Rockhound staff takes. The good thing about this ballpark is, by game time, almost every section is in the shade, and we've got a lot of cover under the concourse. We have this huge RO water jug. It's got 10 spouts. People can walk up to and fill up water anytime during the game for free, Hoppel explained. During last week's home game residency, Hoppel said the heat affected crowd attendance just a little, but that Midlanders continue to show out for their hometown team. It's a little hotter than normal, but we've had this weather in July and August, and I think people know how to stay hydrated. But it's amazing. People tough it out, Hoppel stated. With most concerts and other events happening late into the evening, the tailgate depends on the open land and a large supply of water for guests, according to the venue's Instagram and Facebook posts. During day parties, canopies, umbrellas, and other covered areas provide shaded cool-off stations, while constantly flowing ice-cold drinks help maintain internal temperatures. Then there's places like Eccentric Brewing Company, whose employees embrace their garage-like circumstance and know that if you're coming to hang with them, then you really enjoy the family-like, good-hearted atmosphere they're consistently providing to all who walk through their door. It's hot everywhere. You might as well be hot in a place that has great beer and live music, co-owner Jamie Ells said. Weather facts. Thursday's weather, High temperature was 106 degrees, a record. Record for June 22nd, 107 degrees, set in 1951. Normal high for June 22nd, 96 degrees. 100 degree notables. Consecutive days of 100 degree temperatures, 8. Last 4 days, Monday, 108 degrees, Tuesday, 109, Wednesday, 111, and Thursday, 106. For the next 4 days, Friday, 108 degrees, Saturday, 108 degrees, Sunday, 112 degrees, Monday, 109 degrees. Hottest days in Midland, June 27, 1994, 116 degrees. June 28, 1994, 114 degrees. August 26, 2019, 113 degrees. June 26, 1994, 112 degrees. And July 12, 1989, 112 degrees. Note, 7 days, including June 21st, 2023, tied for 6th at 111 degrees. The source for this was the National Weather Service. Hispanics Top Texas's Demographic Groups by Jose Luis Adriano, The Dallas Morning News. Hispanics are now confirmed as the largest demographic group in Texas with more than 12 million residents, while non-Hispanic white population is estimated to be 11.9 million, according to new data from the Census Bureau. Texas added 262,000 new white residents, as well as about 223,000 Hispanic residents from July 2021 to July 2022. But overall, Hispanic population outnumbered white population by 128,938 people, said data from the Vintage 2022 population estimates released this Thursday. Population estimates released last year already seemed to hint that Latinos had eclipsed non-Hispanic whites as the predominant population group in Texas. Harris, Bexar, and Dallas counties have the biggest Hispanic populations in the state. Harris County has more than 2.1 million Latino residents, or 45% of its total population, adding over 34,000 Latinos from July 2021 to July 2022, explained Christy Wilder, a Census Bureau demographer. Bexar County has 1.2 million Hispanics and gained more than 19,000 in the same period. Dallas County is 41% Hispanic, with 1,078,852 of its 2,600,840 residents, gaining 8,774 new Hispanic residents from July 2021 to July 2022. The state's total Hispanic population increased by 1.9% last year, said Wilder. Hidalgo, El Paso, and Tarrant counties were other counties with Hispanic populations between 657,000 and 822,000. Latinos are the predominant demographic group in 77 counties in Texas. Data from the Census Bureau also revealed the state's median age was 35.5 as in July 2022, while the nation's median age was 38.9 years. Texas remains younger than the national median age and also ranked third among the states with the lowest median ages. Utah's median age was 31.9 and the District of Columbia was 34.8. North Texas counties all had lower than the state median age. Dallas County median age in July 2022 was 34 years, and Tarrant's was 35.1 years. Urban counties that are associated with metro areas are generally younger, explained Wilder. More than 220,000 people in Dallas County were between 25 to 29 years old, the biggest age group in the county. Midland High teacher, coach, arrested in prostitution string. by Mercedes Cordero. Midland ISD reported on Thursday that Douglas Hampton, a Midland High School teacher and varsity assistant girls basketball coach, was arrested on Wednesday. The subject of the arrest was unrelated to his employment, and the arrest did not occur on school district property, Midland ISD reported. Mr. Hampton has been placed on administrative leave with pay, pending further investigation. The district provided no other information. The Lubbock Avalanche Journal reported online that Douglas Hampton, 41, was one of 24 people arrested during a two-day prostitution string. The Lubbock Sheriff's Office reported Hampton was arrested Tuesday for solicitation of prostitution, a felony, according to the Lubbock County Jail inmate records. Midland ISD takes all allegations against employees very seriously, and the safety of our students is our top priority, said Lindsay White, public information officer for Midland ISD. We have no reason to believe there have been any prior arrests for Mr. Hampton. Hampton was released on bond on Wednesday, according to jail records. The two-day human trafficking operation resulted in 13 felony solicitation of prostitution arrests, 8 misdemeanor prostitution arrested, and 2 arrests for possession of marijuana. Midlander charged with multiple felonies after high-speed police chase by Mercedes Cordero. A 26-year-old Midland man is facing multiple felony charges after leading Midland Police Department officers on a high-speed chase on Tuesday, according to court documents. Herberto Vasquez was being held in Midland County Jail on Thursday on 2 counts of aggravated assault against a public servant, first-degree felonies, 2 third-degree felony charges of evading arrest, detention with a vehicle, and stalking, possession of marijuana, a Class A misdemeanor, and detainer hold for the U.S. Marshals Service. Bond was set at a total of $627,500. At about 12:42 a.m. Tuesday, a Midland police officer was patrolling the area of West Golf Course Road and North Main Street and observed a white Honda Accord stopped at a stop sign that did not have a rear license plate light. The officer moved behind the Accord and activated the emergency lights to initiate a traffic stop, according to the arrest affidavit. The Accord driver did not pull to the side for the traffic stop and instead drove off southbound on Main Street at a high rate of speed. The driver, later identified as Vasquez, disregarded multiple stop signs and lights while driving at speeds upwards of 70 miles per hour on Main Street, according to the arrest affidavit. While traveling near the intersection of West Wall Street and Main Street, a female bailed out of the passenger side door. The pursuit continued westbound toward Front Street and reached speeds of about 115 miles per hour. At that point, other officers joined the pursuit, according to the arrest affidavit. At the intersection of West Front Street and Wall Street, Vasquez left the westbound lanes and entered the eastbound lanes, driving straight into oncoming traffic. While driving on the eastbound lanes, Vasquez targeted a Midland police officer with his emergency lights on and drove straight at him, causing the officer to swerve out of his lane to avoid a head-on collision, according to the arrest affidavit. The pursuit continued westbound on West Highway 80, where Department of Public Safety troopers successfully deployed stop sticks. Officers attempted to perform a rolling roadblock when Vasquez started to slow down in order to prevent him from placing more motorists in danger. During this time, Vasquez veered in the direction of a Midland police officer again, causing him to almost enter the bar ditch to avoid being struck, according to the arrest affidavit. After arresting Vasquez, officers learned that he had 2 active arrest warrants for stalking out of Midland County and smuggling aliens probation violation from the U.S. Marshals Service. Officers also found marijuana and a scale in his car during a search, according to the arrest affidavit. Obituaries and Death Notices. Amanda, Mandy, Kathleen Marino. Amanda Mandy Kathleen Marino of Midland, Texas, passed away on June 16, 2023, after a courageous battle with cancer at the age of 49. She was born on December 17, 1973, to Doris Harrison Marino in Roswell, New Mexico. Mandy is survived by her parents, Leroy Sr. and Doris Marino, and siblings Tamara Trickey, Anson Marino, Sandra Jordan, Annette Marino, Jesus Marino, and Leroy Marino. She is also survived by numerous nieces and nephews. She joins her grandparents, Jesus Marino, Sue Marino, Leonard Harrison, Anita Harrison, and nephew James Davidson in heaven. Funeral services will be held at Mid-Cities Church, Neely Campus, at 3309 Neely Avenue, Midland, Texas, on Saturday, June 24th at 10 o'clock a.m. All arrangements are being made privately by the Marino family, and flowers are welcome at 4303 Valley Drive, Midland, Texas, 79707. Ricardo Cobos. Ricardo Cobos, 63, of Midland, Texas, passed away Friday, June 16, 2023, at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was born December 27, 1959, in Midland. He also served in the U.S. Air Force. No services will be held at this time. A Celebration of Life Memorial will be held at a later date. Everett Glenn Maddox. Everett Glenn Maddox passed from this earthly life June 17, 2023. Services will be held at Temple Baptist Church, 4301 Thomason Drive, Midland, Texas, on Saturday, June 24, 2023, at 1 p.m. Tornadoes Tear Through West Texas, 4 Killed, by Ken Miller and Sarah Brumfield, Associated Press. A line of severe storms produced what a meteorologist calls a rare combination of multiple tornadoes, hurricane-force winds, and softball-sized hail in West Texas, killing at least 4 people, injuring 9, and causing significant damage around the town of Matador, a meteorologist said Thursday. The storms produced strong winds that swept across Texas from the Panhandle to Houston, causing damage north of the city, according to weather officials. Governor Greg Abbott on Thursday added 6 counties in the region to a disaster declaration first issued June 16th and amended 3 times in response to severe weather. His statement said the declaration will help state authorities respond swiftly to devastated communities. There was a slight chance storms could form again Thursday afternoon and night, with the possibility of more hail, up to 3 inches in diameter, and winds up to 70 miles per hour, according to National Weather Service meteorologist Alex Ferguson in Amarillo. About 8 p.m. Wednesday, a supercell developed near Amarillo before striking the small town of Matador, said senior forecaster Matt Zeibel with the National Weather Service in Lubbock. He called it certainly rare to see all at the same time killer tornadoes, hurricane-force winds, and softball-sized hail. The damage was concentrated on a 1-mile stretch, with businesses and homes demolished along the west side of Matador, a town where everybody knows everybody, said Brandon Moore, Matador's water superintendent, who is also a volunteer firefighter. It was supposed to move east of us, and within a 5-minute time span, it all changed and switched directions and came straight through Matador, Moore said. We probably had about 2 minutes of warning to get everybody together and get to safety. There's a few people that didn't make it out of the house, but we did rescue several people, and they made it out all right. The city is getting lots of help from people arriving from outside the community, he said. Everybody in the world is offering to come help, which is good, Moore said. We're trying to clean up the mess now and go from there. The storm produced 109 mile per hour winds at Jayton, in addition to hail more than 4 inches wide, Zibel said. And the Weather Service reported a 97 mile per hour wind gust, the strongest ever recorded at Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston since data collection began there in 1969. The previous record there was 82 miles per hour during Hurricane Ike in 2008. Much of the wind damage near Houston, downed trees and knocked down power lines and fences, happened north of the city. The Weather Service sent crews to survey the damage in West Texas on Thursday and determine the strength of the tornadoes, but the team had not reported its findings as of early Thursday afternoon, according to meteorologist Robert Barrett in Lubbock. Wednesday was definitely a rare combination of high-end wind shear and storms of extreme instability, according to Zibel. The worst damage appeared to be in Matador, a town of about 570 people about 70 miles northeast of Lubbock in Motley County. Homes were damaged, buildings were flattened, and power lines were snapped in half. A restaurant's walls were all knocked down, but the booths remained standing in what was called a jaw-dropping scene by Derek Delgado, a spokesman for Lubbock Fire Rescue, which is assisting the town. You would look on one side where we had a general merchandise store completely flattened to the ground, but across the street there's a house that's still standing, and the vehicles haven't even moved from the driveway, Delgado said by telephone. Power outages were widespread across the sparsely populated West Texas region, with more than 900 customers without power in the Matador-Jayton area alone, according to PowerOutage.us. They're in Motley and Kent County, which have fewer than 2,000 people combined. A cooling center was opened in Matador for those without power in warm temperatures, although no heat advisory was issued, with highs expected near 90 degrees. In Harris County, which includes Houston, almost two dozen cooling centers were opened as nearly 90,000 customers remained without power. Thursday's advisory warned the heat index could reach 109 degrees. Wednesday's tornado outbreak came 6 days after a tornado left three people dead and more than 100 injured in Perryton in the northern Texas panhandle. Ex-Texas Congressman Will Hurd launches 2024 bid by Will Weifsert, Associated Press. Former Texas Congressman Will Hurd, a one-time CIA officer and fierce critic of Donald Trump, announced Thursday he's running for president, hoping to build momentum as a more moderate alternative to the Republican frontrunner. Hurd, 45, served three terms in the House through January 2021, becoming the chamber's only black Republican during his final 2 years in office. "We need common sense," said Hurd, who made the announcement on CBS Mornings, adding, "I believe the Republican Party can be the party of the future, not the past." In a campaign video, the former congressman said that the soul of our country is under attack, reminiscent of Democrat Joe Biden's slogan about the 2020 race being a battle for the soul of the nation. "Our enemies plot, create chaos, and threaten the American dream. At home, illegal immigration and fentanyl stream into our country. Inflation still out of control. Crime and homelessness growing in our cities," Hurd says in the video. "President Biden can't solve these problems, or won't. And if we nominate a lawless, selfish, failed politician like Donald Trump, who lost the House, the Senate, and the White House, we all know Joe Biden will win again." Hurd said he's out to redefine the contours of the 2024 race and told NBC's Meet the Press in May that the prospect of another election pitting the current president against the former one would be the rematch from hell. On Thursday, he called himself a dark horse candidate and said that the only way to win is to not be afraid of Donald Trump, and that we also have to articulate a different vision. Her joins a crowded primary field with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former Vice President Mike Pence, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, and anti-woke activist Vivek Ramaswamy, radio host Larry Elder, and Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, in addition to Trump. The ex-congressman has visited Iowa, New Hampshire in recent months. Trump's recent indictment on federal felony charges for mishandling classified documents could potentially open the way for critics like Heard to gain traction in the primary. Heard said Thursday that he would not pardon Trump if the former president is convicted in the federal documents case, and he called many of the other Republican White House candidates who rushed to say they would insane to make that promise so early in the case. Heard said the classification of the documents Trump is accused of mishandling meant they included information that, if it got into the wrong hands, would lead to a loss of life. And the fact that Donald Trump willingly kept that material and he wants to be leader of the free world is unacceptable to me, Heard told the CBS Early Morning Show. It spits in the face of the thousands of men and women who, every single day and every single night, put themselves in harm's way in order to keep us safe. Most of the Republican candidates in the race are trying to run more against Biden than against Trump, who largely remains popular among GOP voters. But Heard joins Christie and Hutchinson in his willingness to criticize Trump and the former president's continued hold on the National Republican Party. Heard opted not to seek re-election to the House in 2020, saying then that he preferred to pursue opportunities outside the halls of Congress to solve problems at the nexus between technology and national security. Last year, he traveled the country on a tour to promote his book, American Reboot, An Idealist Guide to Getting Things Done. Heard represented his state's then most competitive district, which was more than 70% Hispanic and stretched from the outskirts of San Antonio to El Paso, and encompassed more than 800 miles of the 1,200-mile Texas-Mexico border. Before serving in Congress, Heard was a clandestine officer who worked in Pakistan. He speaks Urdu, that country's national language.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, June 17th. Report finds oil pipes to Corpus are filling up. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A boom in U.S. crude exports could soon trigger significant changes in oil market dynamics. East Daily Analytics reports those changes could impact the Port of Corpus Christi as Corpus-bound pipelines continue to operate near 90% utilization. That threshold is a key level for pipeline operators and shippers as crude pipelines are restricted from offering committed service on more than 90% of their total pipeline capacity, leaving 10% for uncommitted service. Unlike natural gas, which is seeing constraints moving out of the Permian, quote, you can get oil out of the basin, it just may not be to your preferred destination, said A.J. O'Donnell, Director, Equity Research at East Daily. Rather than heading to Corpus Christi, where utilization rates have grown from mid-70% a year ago to 90% as of March, Permian crude may need to head to Houston, Beaumont Port Arthur, or the Louisiana Offshore Oil Port. Quote, what we see happening is pipelines can only commit to 90%, leaving 10% for uncommitted or walk-ups who pay rates 2 to 4 times higher, O'Donnell told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Those walk-up shippers may opt to ship to Houston and pay rates just 2 times higher than to Corpus, he said. The Energy Information Administration reported U.S. crude exports hit a record high 4.81 million barrels a day in March, up 82% since the beginning of 2019. East Daily notes that the three primary Gulf Coast export hubs are Corpus Christi, Houston, and Louisiana. Corpus, the research firm says, has been the clear favorite, with outbound crude shipments more than tripling since 2019, accounting for about 75% or 1.6 million barrels a day of the export growth. O'Donnell said Corpus Christi has several advantages, including less ship traffic than the Houston Ship Channel and the ability to load larger vessels with less need for reverse lightering services. Buyers can also source clean Permian or Eagle Ford barrels undiluted by other North American crude qualities. Exports will continue to be integral to Permian Basin producers because, as O'Donnell observed, domestic demand isn't going anywhere, end quote. There may be additional demand from incremental refinery expansion, he said, but the nation continues to lose refining capacity as other refineries are idled. That throws off the traditional market balancing tool of supply and imports equaling refining and export demand. Quote, that incremental supply out of the Permian Basin has to go somewhere, he said. With Corpus pipelines at the 90% threshold, O'Donnell said more pipeline capacity is needed, and there are several proposals to do just that, including EPIC crude pipelines proposal to add 300,000 barrels and Gray Oak 200,000 barrels. While neither has been sanctioned yet, once one gets done, that will open the floodgates, he said. The port is also dredging its channel, which will allow for more large crude carriers, LLCs, to be serviced. East Daily is also watching proposals for offshore facilities, with permits being pursued for facilities offshore Houston and Corpus. Quote, if one gets done, that will shake up export dynamics, O'Donnell said. Inner harbor volumes would be displaced and go offshore to completely fill LCCs, which would be cheaper to do, end quote. Whether that crude leaves Corpus or Houston or Beaumont Port Arthur or the Loop, he said it's clear the U.S. has become an increasingly important source of energy to the world. Group highlights excavation safety in Permian oil fields. The story was written by Mela McEwen. There is far more digging in Permian Basin oil fields than wellbores. The Permian Basin is also home to excavations for pipelines and even utility poles to accommodate producers' rising energy needs as oil and gas operations continue to expand. Beyond that, producers are also impacted by excavation work around them. Quote, we've been impacted by Loop 250 expansion, observed Fabian Ortega, senior health and safety specialist with Pioneer Natural Resources, which has affected the company's pipelines in the area of the expansion. His crews have also overseen installation of a number of utility poles, he added. Pioneer also has 9 pipeline crews, he said. Ortega addressed the June meeting of the Permian Basin Service, Transmission, Exploration, and Production, or STEPS, Safety Network, which fell during National Excavation Safety Month. Ortega highlighted fatalities linked to excavation sites, noting there were 40 such fatalities last year, including 22 in the first half of 2022, compared to 15 in all of 2021. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration was so alarmed it has launched several initiatives to improve safety. The key is to follow guidelines issued by both the Railroad Commission and Texas 811 in terms of finding out where the various lines, oil, natural gas, petroleum products pipelines, fiber optic, telephone, or electric lines are buried before beginning to excavate, Ortega said. Those doing the excavations should also follow procedures established by the companies that hired them, he added. Ortega said between the 1st of February and the 1st of May of this year, there were 237 excavations within 25 feet of Pioneer lines, and Pioneer was notified in only 10% of those cases, despite procedures requiring notification if work comes within 25 feet of those lines. The last five instances of excavators striking Pioneer lines could have been avoided if the excavators had followed those instructions, Ortega said. Line strikes have even impacted 911 emergency calls, according to John Floyd, public health preparedness coordinator with the City of Midland. Brandon Jennings, general manager with T&M Line Locators, echoed Ortega's advice to follow Railroad Commission and Texas 811 guidelines to improve excavation safety and avoid line strikes. Jennings detailed the various tickets excavators can receive from Texas 811, from a ticket for a new dig to tickets for altered locations or for emergency response or even for future projects. Be sure to read all the notes submitted by the utilities and operators, he advised, including how many lines are in the area, what the GPS coordinates are when the digging starts, and what an individual operator's procedures and standards are for its line crossings. Anyone has the authority to stop an excavation or trenching project if they perceive it's unsafe or workers are in danger, the audience was reminded. STEPS members were also told there is an effort to remind the public at large, from homeowners to farmers and everyone in between, about the requirements to call 811 before digging, even if it's to plant a flower bed or tree or install a tree. A QR code has been created with regulations and recommendations for safe digging, with the hope it will be downloaded and spread. Tech study details economic impact of Texas pipelines. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Without the pipelines allowing the state's crude and natural gas to flow to end users, Texas's oil and natural gas industry would not be the national and global leader in production that it has been for the last number of years. A new study from Texas Tech shows that outside of the upstream sector, the midstream sector is an economic powerhouse in itself. Quote, "We're very proud of the significant impact we have on the Texas economy," Thur Cannon, president of the Texas Pipeline Association, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The TPA commissioned the study, conducted by the Center for Energy Commerce at Texas Tech, found the state's pipeline industry provided over $60.5 billion in economic output in 2022 and an estimated $12,250 in property tax revenues generated per mile of pipeline for a typical Texas county. Even counties in the state's main producing areas, the Permian and Eagle Ford, receive such revenues, Cannon said. Cannon said the biggest takeaway from the study, written by Bradley Ewing, professor of energy commerce in the Rawls College of Business at Texas Tech, is that it focuses solely on the midstream sector. Quote, "Producing and refining numbers are enormous. These numbers are enormous as well," he said. He said he plans to share the study and the benefits pipelines provide with policymakers and, quote, "I would love to share this with chambers of commerce around the state," end quote. While he hopes policymakers and chamber members alike will be impressed with the numbers, quote, "Don't discount safety. Pipelines are the safest, most efficient way to transport energy products. One 20-inch pipeline in one county will displace 1,650 truck trips a day in that one county," end quote. With more than 1,000 people estimated to be moving to Texas daily, Cannon said the resulting energy demand growth will require additional infrastructure, and he expects member companies will be looking beyond hydrocarbons and liquids to move carbon dioxide, CO2, amid efforts to capture and sequester the greenhouse gas or transport it to areas where it can be used to enhance oil production or in other industrial uses. The report finds the economic impact of Texas pipelines will only grow, forecasting that over the next 40 years, the pipeline industry will have a cumulative economic impact of $1.86 trillion in economic impact. Quote, "The Texas midstream industry will be a crucial player in the global playing field far into the future, while delivering trillions of dollars in economic benefit and more than a 500,000 jobs to the state," said Ewing in a statement accompanying the release of the study. Quote, "It is clear that pipelines are of great benefit to the residents and businesses of this growing state," end quote. Chevron and Pilot Water signed produced water agreement. The story was written by Mella McEwen. New water infrastructure is planned to help address seismicity in the Delaware Basin and help one of the Permian's major producers manage its produced water. Chevron USA and Pilot Water Solutions have entered into a long-term contract for water management services. Under the agreement, Pilot will construct and operate a large diameter pipeline and related disposal infrastructure to safely, efficiently, and effectively transport produced water away from Culberson County for shallow disposal in Reeves County. Quote, "Chevron is pleased to execute a contract with Pilot Water Solutions for water management services. We are committed to protecting people and the environment, and this agreement secures produced water takeaway capacity for a portion of our Delaware Basin operations," said Michelle Haranitsky, Chevron's water strategy and planning team lead in Permian, in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Zachary Neal, Senior Vice President, Corporate Development at Pilot, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that construction is already underway on the infrastructure, with the initial phase expected to be in service in August. Quote, "Managing produced water is a mission-critical element for the oil and gas industry. This partnership was a natural fit as Pilot Water Solutions and Chevron have a shared goal of safely, effectively, and efficiently managing produced water," he wrote. That is supplemented by Pilot's track record in the region, where the company has a robust footprint of about 900 miles of pipeline and 125 disposal wells, with over 2 million barrels of disposal capacity, Neal added. All of Pilot's disposal wells in Texas are within the shallow zones, about 4,000 to 6,000 feet below the surface, well outside seismically sensitive depths. In addition, quote, "We have significant resources dedicated to further understanding and monitoring seismicity, and our disposal solutions are industry-leading in mitigating seismic risk. Our goal is to lead by example from the front of the pack, and we believe this partnership with Chevron does just that, providing the blueprint for others looking to manage water safely and reliably in the region," Neal wrote. While the Pilot Chevron project is devoted to safely, effectively, and efficiently transporting produced water out of the more seismically active areas in Culberson County for reuse or injection in shallow disposal wells in Reeves County, Neal said beneficial reuse can't be counted out. Quote, "As beneficial reuse technologies advance, we believe this and other infrastructure we own in the Permian Basin will play a critical role in the solution," Neal wrote. Under the agreement, Pilot will construct and operate a large diameter pipeline and related disposal infrastructure.
obituaries. Jamie Stephenson, age 69, passed away on June the 10th. Martin Lujan Carrillo, age 66, of Odessa, died Thursday, June the 15th. Michael Sean Harris, age 44, of Crane, passed away on Thursday, June the 15th. Tommy Wayne Harris, age 89, of Odessa, died Monday, June the 19th. Amanda Lynn Hollowell, age 38, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June the 13th. May Ola Keel, age 96, of Odessa, died Monday, June the 19th. Alfonso Mata, age 67, of Odessa, died Monday, June the 19th. Maria Perez Mendoza, age 95, of Odessa, died Thursday, June the 15th. Charles Etta Pat Peterson, age 73, of Odessa, died Sunday, June the 9th. Todd Austin Vasek, age 64, passed away on June the 16th. Erskine Emil Wanst, age 95, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June the 13th. Navelle Joyce Wanch, 94, of Odessa, died Thursday, June the 15th. Betty R. Haywood died June the 12th. Lawrence E. Red Abbott, age 86, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June the 6th. Philip Wayne Anderson, age 67, of Odessa, died Saturday, June the 10th. Rufina Barroza, age 82, of Odessa, died Sunday, June the 11th. Carol Wayne Forrest, age 85, of Abilene, passed away on Wednesday, June the 14th. Carol Leverett, age 98, of Odessa, passed away on June the 11th. Gregorio Corrales Leva Jr. of Odessa, age 65, died Thursday, June the 8th. Maria de Jesus Mendoza, age 96, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June the 13th. Elizabeth June Mitchum of Odessa, age 56, passed away on June the 7th. Mary Imogene Molly Petty, age 79, passed away on Wednesday, June the 14th. Joe Don Taylor, age 84, of Odessa, passed away on Saturday, June the 10th. Students get taste of UTBP life. Nearly 150 students converged on University of Texas Permian Basin Tuesday for the first orientation season of the summer, getting the sight, sound, smell, and taste of college life. The event, which goes into Wednesday, includes students and parents. Students hear from many offices and departments across campus who provide them with resources to be successful. They'll also connect with other first-time students and have the opportunity to join student organizations. They also stay on campus to allow them to get the experience of housing and what college feels like. President Sandra Woodley gave an overview of campus transformation plans for the Quad and Mesa building. Students also got to see the library with the eSports area. I'm just so happy to be the president here. I've been here 6 years. I love this university. I love the people of this university. We have the best students around, and we hope that you'll find your way here and we'll take good care of you when you are here, Woodley said. Senior Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, Becky Spurlock, told students her job is to make the university work for them. When you hit bumps in the road, there will be bumps. It's just the nature of the college experience. We want you to know that we've chosen a place that's big enough to have the resources to help you, but small enough that people will know your name. They'll be ready to help you. The people in this room, the people in the cafeteria or the Mesa Market, your faculty, you'll make friends with all sorts of people across campus. Everybody is ready to help you, so I have just one piece of advice that I'm going to give you. Don't suffer in silence, Spurlock said. When things go wrong, tell somebody. She added that students need to tell a resident assistant, a faculty member, a staff member, or her. You don't have to remember my name or title. My hair is always some amount of pink. You'll see me running around campus. Just stop me and say, hey, can I tell you something? Or email her, Spurlock said. Ashley Castillo, who will be a junior studying child and family studies, was one of the orientation leaders. She wanted that job because she loves the school so much. I wanted to be a part of something that made other people love the school as much as I do, Castillo said. A student in the early college program, Castillo, who is from Slayton, was a distant student at UTBP, so she learned a lot through that. She decided to come back to school later in her life. She's 21 now. The campus loves you as much as you will love it. If you don't love it, it will still love you. My biggest thing is this campus will help you through whatever you are going through. I have been to many places for school, and I've never had a school love me back as much as I love it. I've never had a school help me through so much as a student, Castillo said. Program coordinator for student life, Joshua Lugan, is a graduate of UTBP. Being involved in orientation is his favorite thing to do. He added that he loves being a part of UTBP. It's a wonderful experience. I really enjoy it. It's fulfilling for me. I wanted to be a teacher, and then I knew that wasn't the route for me. I knew I wanted to work with students, so this is the wonderful capacity that I get to mentor students with my orientation staff and also get to reach new students that come into our programs every single year, Lugan said. Students go through the welcome. They learn about financial aid and how to pay for college, among other things. Alongside all the academic offices that they get to talk to, they get to meet student organizations and other departments and get connected to the university. Our little motto and phrase that we are using this year is "One connection changes everything." That is something that we truly believe in because meeting one person can truly change everything. He added that his message to students is "Take chances." This is your time to invest in the next 4 or 5 years of your life, so the experience truly is what you make it. Do things that make you happy. Do things that encourage you to explore and push your boundaries, because right now is the time to do it, Lugan said. Trap, neuter, release programs for cats may soon be legally protected in Texas. Tammy Dexter never thought she would see the day when a trap, neuter, release program for cats would come to her suburban Houston community. But a bill signed by Governor Greg Abbott might make that more likely by protecting people from facing possible criminal charges when they return sterilized cats to the wild. House Bill 3660 slipped through the legislative process without opposition until now. It raises the divisive issue of whether trapping, neuter, release programs are the right way to handle feral cats. The American Bird Conservancy is sharply criticizing it. The group doesn't believe cats should be released because they kill a startling number of birds. We can't just have people dumping animals. It's not humane for the animal that's dumped, and it puts the community at risk, said Grant Sizemore, director of invasive species programs for the American Bird Conservancy. It jeopardizes the health and safety of people, wildlife, and domestic animals. Texas law considers unreasonable abandonment of an animal in someone's care a misdemeanor offense. Some jurisdictions still supported the tax neuter release, or TNR, approach in spite of the legal gray area. HB 3660, which immediately became law when Abbott signed it last weekend, will protect those who release neutered cats from being prosecuted for abandonment.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.